Welcome back to the Baby Sleep Consultant podcast. I'm Emma, the owner and founder of Baby Sleep Consultant, and today we are going to talk about the truth behind teething and try to sort some of the science from the misconceptions, because there are a lot of misconceptions out there when it comes to teething, and especially around teething and sleep. So when it does come to teething, you probably are aware there are a lot of myths and false information out there all over social media and on the internet, and even word of mouth from parent to parent. But it's interesting to know that actually a lot of this comes from history, really, really old history. But us as parents, we just can't seem to let go of it. Every time I personally turn on social media, there is another urban legend about teething being passed around as advice or facts. There's another parent talking about their baby who's been waking at night since they were 3 months old due to teething. Now they're 7 months old and this is still going on. Still don't have any teeth though. Or maybe it's a parent talking about the fever and the diarrhea their baby has from teething. We'll get into this a little bit later on. So hopefully today we're going to clear up a bit of these misconceptions and talk about the history where all these stories came from. So from what I can tell, this problem around the misinformation of teething stretches a really long way back. Back in the mid 1800s, in fact, teething was considered such a serious disease that apparently 4% of infant deaths in London in 1842 were attributed to teething. 4%. That's crazy. Just imagine that for a second. Your baby passing away and the doctors attributing it to teething. This is why today we still have so many people attributing so many symptoms to teething. Later in that century, around 1894, Dr. Thrasher, who was a well-known dentist, wrote in the Dental Cosmos sort of scientific journal, and he was quoted saying, "So deadly has teething become that 1/3 of human family die before 20 teeth have appeared." Crazy. And they were thinking this was all down to teething. But the reality is, in previous centuries, between 6 months and 4 years, infant mortality is extremely high, or was extremely high. And this just happened to correlate to a period where children got all their teeth, hence the quote around getting 20 teeth. So this is a really great example now in more modern times. And we understand science a lot better, that correlation doesn't always equal causation. Just because the children were dying in a time that correlated with teething didn't mean the teething was causing the children to die. So just because infant mortality was high in this age bracket definitely doesn't mean teething was to blame. Still, if we look back into the mid-1800s, the London Bills of Mortality regularly listed teeth, and sometimes grouped with worms, gross, as the second most common cause of childhood death after the deaths within the first few months of life. So the first most common cause was in those first sort of 1 to 3 months. And then the second most common cause was teething grouped with worms in the 1800s. In fact, right up until the early 20th century, most pediatric textbooks continued to discuss mortality around the time of first tooth and as a consequence of it. Crazy. Ironically, a lot of the so-called remedies for teething over this time period, they actually would have contributed directly to the high morbidity and mortality of these teething babies. So what they thought they were doing to be helpful was actually harmful to the babies. Some might say that even some modern teething aids have gone down this route. Anyway, they were doing things like giving babies opiates, lead, mercury, bromide, and they even tried putting leeches on the gums, not sure why. They used hot nails, and quite a common practice was even to cut the gums open to sort of let the teeth out. None of this obviously did anything positive, apart from, contributing to the death of these children. So suffice to say, some of the information out there is pretty ludicrous. Growing teeth doesn't result in fatalities. even back in the old days. And I would say when I was doing research for this podcast, the most worrying study that I did come across, and this was just personally worrying for me because it was actually more recent, 1986, and this study referred to human teething virus and as a solution suggested the prescription of amoxicillin, which is an antibiotic. We've probably all heard of that if we've got children. So obviously, as well as it being completely pointless to prescribe antibiotics, which are used for bacterial infections to treat a virus, if one were even to exist, this is crazy. They literally thought that teething was a virus. Anyway, parents today, they still tend to blame a lot of sleep disturbances on teething. But the fact is, teething itself isn't to blame for many long-term sleep problems that people come to us for. I think it's similar to the four-month sleep regression in that people will say, my child went through the four-month sleep regression and things never really improved. And they'll also say, my child started teething and then things never really improved. So this might, if your child's okay with teething, this might seem like a slight exaggeration, but the fact remains that symptoms and sleepless nights getting attributed to teething way more than necessary or accurate. So obviously I did a lot of research for this podcast. Let's look at what some of the more modern science does have to say around teething. So my first finding was that many of the more serious symptoms of teething just haven't been proven by science. So numerous studies have looked and did not find a correlation or causation between a clinical fever, diarrhea, or vomiting and teething. Most studies found a flat out no to the question of significant fever, although there was one that reported a rise in body temperature only on the day the tooth actually erupts through the gums, but the temperature variation topped out at 0.3 degrees Celsius, so not a clinically significant fever, just a rise, a slight rise in body temperature. And then when I looked into it, this rise in body temperature could be attributed to what is going on when the tooth erupts. So the skin above the tooth starts to produce a lot of inflammatory cytokines. And cytokines are chemical messengers produced by the body. Often these messages that they are telling the body to do is to increase inflammation. So like when you hurt your ankle in a sporting accident, your body produces a lot of cytokines to increase the inflammation in the area and promote healing. So teething also has been shown to increase cytokines in the mouth. So these studies have found cytokines interleukin 1 beta and TNF alpha levels are raised as the tooth erupts. And these particular cytokines are resulting in that 0.3 degree rise in body temperature. And some of the sleep disturbances that you might experience could also be down to these two cytokines being increased. So while the increases in levels of interleukin beta and IL-8 are correlated in teething babies with appetite disturbances, so interleukin 1 beta does the temperature and sleep disturbances, and then combined when also produced with interleukin 8, these two have been seen in a correlation with appetite disturbances, so baby not being that interested in eating or having their milk during the day. So that I think that's really interesting that it's not necessarily the pain of a tooth cutting the gum as such that's putting baby off their food or causing a sleep blip. It could just be that the body's producing these inflammatory cytokines, which is causing a bit of upset in your child around the time that they're cutting their tooth. But what about the rest of the symptoms that people talk about? So the diarrhea and nappy rash that seems to occur when a tooth is on its way. Now, popular opinion here when I talk to people or watch videos on social media is that people believe the increase in saliva leads to more acidic stools. But if we think about this logically, the science just doesn't really stack up. So for starters, the pH level of our stomach is already 1.5 to 3.5, which is incredibly acidic. So anything under 7 is acidic, and so obviously 1 to 3 is very acidic. Whereas the saliva, on the other hand, has a pH of 6.2 to 7.6, which means it's basically neutral or slightly alkaline, or basic if you're not used to the word alkaline. So if we consumed enough saliva as a baby to influence our stools, we'd actually make our stools more alkaline, so heading closer to neutral and away from being more acidic. So that just doesn't really stack up with what people are saying. And even if it did become acidic from something going on in the mouth, something that could burn your baby's bottom would also be burning the skin off their mouths. So you would be seeing that correlation there. In fact, the diarrhea that your baby might experience is actually much more likely to be the result of a virus. Things like rotavirus, E. coli, or a bacterial infection, these things are much more likely, especially in this time period. The saliva acid increase idea that people, you know, float around, it's just kind of physiologically impossible. You know, if you understand a little bit of high school chemistry, that doesn't really stack up. And there's no study to date that has said diarrhea is a symptom of teething. And since infants can quickly become dehydrated, this isn't a symptom to be ignored or blame away on teeth. You're really best to seek medical attention if you think your baby has diarrhea and make sure you keep up their fluids around that time. Another really worrying study that I came across found that 50 babies that were hospitalized for quote unquote teething symptoms, well, 48 of them were found to actually have another organic cause for their illness. So what appeared to the parents to be teething symptoms, they were actually really sick. So these babies had things like upper respiratory tract infections, bronchial pneumonia, febrile convulsions, eczema, gastro, urinary tract infections, and even one baby had meningitis. So if your baby seems really out of sorts, no matter what the symptom list is, I would definitely see a doctor. Some of the other symptoms that parents talk about, these may have a bit more of a basis. So parents talk about the redness in their baby's cheeks, the baby becoming increasingly irritable, having more saliva and drooling, and having sort of a sore mouth, irritation, wanting to bite things. And these have been seen in a minority of cases, which I think is interesting when we start to look at the numbers. So in one study of over 20,000 infants, which is a lot, they found that increased biting, drooling or dribbling, gum rubbing, sucking, irritability, wakefulness, facial rash, decreased appetite for solids, and a mild temp, so that's 0.3 degrees, were all statistically associated with teething. But no symptom occurred in more than 35% of the babies that they looked at. So around a third. Not every baby will show these signs and symptoms, and in fact, we could say most actually won't. And in that same study, they said no symptoms occurred greater than 20% more often in teething versus non-teething infants. So even non-teething infants showed these mild symptoms around this age. So it's really hard to decipher what is actually going on with your baby at this age. Amongst all the science of what teething symptoms have been scientifically found to be attributed to, what I came across constantly was that teething, it's a natural physiological process that occurs usually without problem. As mentioned just moments ago, you know, those symptoms are only showing up in 35% of babies. And one study showed that mothers of firstborn children were found to have a higher tendency to attribute symptoms to teething than those who previously experienced having children. So obviously with more experience, we acquire more knowledge and we know when something is wrong with our baby versus they're just cutting a tooth and have some mild symptoms, and we can get better at taking them to the doctor when something's actually going on. So all this is not to say that our babies don't experience discomfort when they're cutting a new tooth. However, the symptoms are usually very mild, and therefore any disturbance to their sleep, also very mild. If your child is experiencing major sleep issues, honestly, it's likely to be something else. Often if a baby can't yet self-settle, so I find if they can't get themselves to sleep independently and they rely on a sleep association linked to you, such as feeding, rocking, holding, patting, putting in a pacifier, contact napping, then what happens with teething is they wake due to the end of a sleep cycle. That's normal, we'd expect that. but their teeth feel a bit annoying, so they don't immediately go back to sleep. Then after a while, they start to feel tired and annoyed. Then their teeth are annoying. Then we start to hear crying, and they need your help to get back to sleep. Versus if they can self-settle and they're kind of used to it, then often after that initial wake-up, they might grizzle and then just self-settle back to sleep. With that, understanding the mean age of tooth eruption, this is around 7 months, so the average age of tooth eruption is around 7 months, then this is just another reason why I highly recommend that you work on self-settling around that 5 to 6 month age to help you with teething as well. Now, if your baby is waking at night and you're not sure if it's teething or a challenge in the self-settling department, one clue that I tell parents to look for is the temperament during the day. I maintain that teeth growing is not strictly a nocturnal activity. So if they are distressed in the evening or overnight due to a tooth, then they probably would have been that day too. So have a look at their behavior that day to get an indication of what might be going on that night. One of the really common questions that I get is around how long do babies teeth for? And I think, you know, if you're a follower of Baby Sleep Consultant, you know that sleep tends to fall apart around 3 to 4 months due to all the changes, which we now attribute and call the 4 month sleep regression. But for other people, this can be the time where they start to call it teething. So some people claim their baby was teething from like 3 to 7 months. And then finally at 7 months, a tooth comes through. And in their mind, the teeth are just moving around, not actually coming through, but just moving in the gums, causing all these sleep disturbances. But it's just highly unlikely that this is what's going on, because the studies that have looked into teething symptoms have reported that symptoms were only significantly present in the 4 days before the tooth emerged, the day of emergence, and 3 days after. So a little 8-day window, basically before the tooth popped out, is what they could see symptoms for teething associated with. So if your baby has had disturbed sleep from 3 months to 7 months when they finally get a tooth, then just the last 8 days really is what we would attribute to teething, not that 4 month period. So what else could actually be causing these sleep disturbances or symptoms that people are reporting on in this time period? So to work out when this time period is, we need to know that the appearance of teeth tends to follow fairly normal pattern. Incisors first, so they're like your front and bottom teeth, the flat ones, then your canines, then your molars. And the median age for that first incisor to come through is around 7.1 months for boys and 7.6 months for girls. So this is the time period that we're looking at to try to figure out what's going on with sleep. Interestingly, studies did find that parents found symptoms to be worse for their first babies, first tooth. So the first time they cut a tooth, parents find that babies are most unsettled. So what's going on then in this 6 to 7 month period that could actually be causing sleep glitches if it's not teeth? So the period of teething, that 6 to 8 months, also coincides with a reduction in immune function and a switch for our babies from passive immunity to active immunity. So that means basically they're losing the antibodies they got from their mum through pregnancy and if you're breastfeeding, and now their body is switching into active immunity, where they have to make their own antibodies in response to their environment and any pathogens they may encounter. So during this switchover period, there's a little bit of a lowered immune function. And this is starting at a time when they're putting their hands in their mouths constantly, and their gums are raw because teeth are erupting through. So there's a nice easy access point for anything germy that's going into their mouth. So bacteria, viruses, all that stuff. Nice easy access point through the gums. Babies at this age are on the move, picking things up, putting things in their mouth, interacting with humans more out and about, touching them, putting their hands in their mouth. You get the picture. It's kind of gross. So it's kind of to be expected then that at this time there's going to be an increase in infections. So things like upper respiratory infections, ear infections, urinary tract infections, gastro, all the stuff starts to appear around this time. And this is a more sort of sensible explanation than teething. So additional to this, we can also look at the fact that your child's producing more saliva, but this actually correlates with the time where they need to start producing more saliva because they're going to start eating solids. So their salivary glands are really kicking in. The saliva contains an enzyme called amylase, which they need a lot of to help with digestion when they first start eating. So this timing also correlates. So the drooling and the excess saliva could just be this also, not just teething. So not only are your baby's first teeth the most likely to cause a problem, especially if you're a first-time parent, they're also the ones that grow when our children are younger, so in this 3 to 8 month window, whereas they get their molars when they're a bit older and their immune system at that time is a bit more developed. So we don't see as many of the symptoms at that age because it more likely correlates to this changeover in immune system function. So what about the issues surrounding sleep then? Teeth generally start to emerge between 6 to 8 months. We've established that, right? Average tooth age eruption, 7.1 to 7.6 months. And this is a huge time for change in our baby's bodies, their brains and development, especially when it comes to sleep. In this 6 to 8 month period, not only is your baby cutting teeth, they're starting solids. And we know this can cause a sleep blip because they are suddenly having to produce all sorts of new byproducts as a result of these new foods. They can feel gassy, they can feel constipated, or they might just find the feeling of digesting solid food enough to make their naps go a bit wonky. You know, they just feel different over this time. And on top of all this, they're probably getting really good at rolling. So much so that they're doing it in their cots and they cry out when they're stuck like a seal on their tummies and they need you to come and help them. But for some parents, this cry could easily be confused as pain from teething. You know, they're crying. Maybe they're in pain. But actually, they just need you to help them roll over. Then they're starting to crawl. So your baby wants to crawl all the time. And this is one of those milestones that's occurring in the 6 to 8 month period. So every sleep time, they get tired and frustrated because they haven't gone to sleep or they haven't gone back to sleep if it's 3 a.m. And then we get more crying in the night because they're crawling around everywhere and they're not sleeping. Are they teething? Maybe. Or are they just frustrated after all that crawling and they need to get back to sleep? So this is where you can see if they can self-settle and you're confident they can self-settle, this really helps their sleep stay on track. 6 to 8 months is a time when a lot of hands-on settling techniques like rocking, patting, feeding, holding, contact naps, these can all become quite overstimulating by 6 to 8 months. Your baby starts to really fight you and they won't settle. Then they're crying because they're tired and they're not settling, but you're thinking, this strategy, it used to work. So as parents, we start to think, what have I done wrong? And because the mean or average age for cutting a tooth is 7 months, we think, oh, maybe they're teething. So we adapt what we're doing, maybe start to incorporate teething aids at sleep time, teething gels, and they still won't sleep. Starts to feel confusing, right? But in all likelihood, if we remember those stats of only 35%, they're probably just overstimulated by the newborn settling approaches, and they're ready for us to let them move on to self-settling. So rather than thinking they're in so much pain from their first tooth they can't sleep, they probably just need to learn to self-settle. And then what about food refusal? So we've talked a little bit about the biological agents that can be at play here, the cytokines, the infections. They can quickly develop. But what else could be happening other than teeth to put a baby off their food in the day? And the answer here is too much eating at night. So if your baby is in the prime teething window, 6 to 8 months, when they're likely also able to sleep most of the night without a feed, but a lot of my clients aren't when they come to me to start working with me. When I finish working with them, most of my clients in this age bracket are having one or no feeds a night. And this means they have a really good appetite for food, solid food and milk in the day. But if your baby is waking frequently at night, either from maybe they need you as a sleep aid, so you're the person that has to rock them or pat them or feed them back to sleep. Even if you think they're waking frequently from teething, so you feed them back to sleep frequently, then they're having a lot of feeds at night. And this could well start being reverse cycling as they get older. Even if they've always had a lot of feeds at night and nothing's really changed, but you get to that 6 to 8 month period and they're having a lot of feeds at night and they're starting to refuse food in the day, this could now be reverse cycling because they're older and they can get through the night with less food. So reverse cycling is when they're taking in so many calories at night, they just aren't hungry in the day. And this can start to look like milk or solids fussiness or refusal during the day. Now, one way you can work out if this is teething or reverse cycling is, are they feeding well at night? Now, if they wake up and they feed well and they're not fussy, then it's likely not teething, right? Because they're fine to feed at night. Again, this won't be something that just occurs during the day. So if that's the case, it's probably a little bit of reverse cycling and we actually just need to get them to sleep a bit more at night and feed a little bit less so that they have a bit of an appetite during the day and they aren't as fussy around feeding. Now, a lot of the solutions to these sleep challenges revolve around self-settling and having the confidence to let your baby self-settle. Even if they're grizzling and you think they might be cutting a tooth or learning to roll over or starting solids. And that's why I think that study showed that first-time parents are more likely to talk about teething symptoms, you know, because they just haven't been around the block as many times. So they do attribute a few more of these signs to teething as opposed to just going, hey, I'm just going to let yourself settle back to sleep. One final challenge that I want to talk to you about that is occurring in the 6 to 8 month prime tooth window is your baby actually needs less sleep. If you've listened to the previous podcast on 3 to 6 month old babies, you'll know that your baby is going to be dropping from 3 naps a day to 2 naps a day in this 6 to 8 month window. And during this drop from 3 to 2, often we find their day sleeps get a bit wonky just while they kind of recalibrate and get used to it. And then consequently, their nights can become a bit wonky. Often the transition from 3 naps to 2 will start to see a false start at night. So that 45-minute wake up after going to bed. And this is due to that wake window after the last nap suddenly becoming, you know, closer to 4 hours, when previously with 3 naps, it might have only been 2 hours. And it's a big change. It's not too big if your baby's already been used to having a very short 4:30 sleep, but still a big change. So that can start to cause these false starts. But for a lot of parents, this is also easily misinterpreted as teething, when actually it's just your baby adjusting to a new nap schedule. So I remind everyone to look at night sleep through the window of what's happened that day. If your baby was happy all day, they're unlikely to suddenly be in pain 45 minutes into their night sleep. Now, perhaps there is a night that your little one's cutting a tooth and needs extra cuddles. These small blips are natural and normal. However, if you want to avoid the slippery slope of habitual wake-ups that last for months and months, we need to be confident the next day to stick to our good sleep habits and get things back on track. Sleep disturbances from teething or otherwise can quickly lead to overtiredness and reliance on new parent-led sleep associations, like rocking, feeding, holding, and then we've got, you know, habitual overnight wake-ups. So try to get back on track as soon as you can. What about if we start to look at what actually does work for teething when we're talking about pain relief and remedies? So topical gels for teething, they contain things like either lidocaine or choline salicylate. These are numbing and non-steroid anti-inflammatory drugs. And they've actually been reviewed due to safety concerns. And a lot of gels containing these ingredients, depending on what country you're in, are now prescription or pharmacy only medicines. So they're not your first choice or first line remedies anymore. Teething necklaces, also dangerous, ineffective, and not recommended by the medical community for babies, infants, teething, or otherwise. What most medical professionals will recommend is ice cold flannels to chew on, solid non-liquid filled chew toys, and cuddle therapy, cuddles with parents. And if you need something, then get some pain relief like Pamol prescribed. But definitely talk to your doctor about this, because most of the time they'll only want you giving this for a couple of days. And obviously we've talked about a lot of other things that can look like teething but are more serious illnesses. So you want to make sure you're not giving Pamol for an ear infection, for example, not knowing that it's an ear infection and thinking it's teething because your baby's unhappy. So that kind of leads into the final warning about teething and the teething symptoms. So as I mentioned earlier, with the 48 out of 50 babies having an actual illness when they were admitted to hospital with teething symptoms, another article I came across attested to this: the suboptimal management of the common patterns that we attribute to teething are causing us to miss serious illnesses. So the science states that any teething symptoms that are minor and relate to discomfort rather than illness. So if your baby's unwell, like we've talked about, diarrhea, vomiting, fever, a lot of pain, it's likely that they're actually unwell. And I would definitely seek a medical diagnosis for that. Similarly, if you have a little one with no appetite for days or becoming really irritable day after day, please see a doctor, because there really could be something else going on. I've been guilty of this myself, missed an ear infection, and I've finally taken my baby to the doctor and they've said, yep, she's got an ear infection and she would have had it for the last week, when I just thought my baby that was unable to communicate was just grumpy, you know, maybe they were teething. But no, they actually had an ear infection. So if you've realized after listening to this, I really need to start working on self-settling, or you need some one-on-one help, I have put some links in the show notes for you. We have masterclasses, online programs, and internationally available phone consults from our team of sleep consultants. So these are all options available if you want some help. Otherwise, we do Q&As on Instagram. We have our Sleepify sleep membership, where you can watch videos from myself and my team of sleep consultants, download workbooks, e-guides, and all that great stuff as well. All right, join me next week and we will cover another hot topic around baby and toddler sleep.